it's a lonely road. And so it's the whole point of this is like the whole team wants all of us to be successful. And if one person's struggling, we want to step in and help you out.
From Tuple, this is Distributed, where we show how world-class engineers and their teams tackle the challenges of remote work. I'm Jack Hanna, your host. Let's get to the real work. Today, I'm talking with Chris Oliver, software developer, founder of GoRails, creator and host for the Remote Ruby podcast. Chris, you've been a longtime friend of the company in one way or another, so we're psyched to have you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We've enjoyed following your work with GoRails and the variety of other projects you've been working on. What was the moment when you knew, hey, starting GoRails was what you wanted to do?
I had written a bunch of tutorials for a long time for like Linux, because I bought a laptop and my parents were like, you can't install Linux on there. If something goes wrong, you'll brick your laptop. And I was like, I'm fairly certain that's not how that works, and I'm going to try it anyways. But I was worried, you know, just in case they were right. But I had found myself on the Ubuntu Linux forums chatting with all these people who created a thread and was like, here, I'm just going to document all the stuff I did for my laptop. And I found one that was like the AMD version of the same laptop I had. The Intel version was mine. And so I used his to make a tutorial for mine with its little differences and other things. And that eventually led me to, like, I learned Rails, learned everything I knew from Ryan Bates doing Rails casts. And he had quit like a year and a half before I started GoRails. But I was documenting things on my own personal blog, and it would go from like some random thought about pricing and business idea thing to like a Rails tutorial for like dealing with cookies or something. And at a certain point I was like, I should just buy a domain that's Rails specific and put all that stuff there. So I did. I found gorails.com was not taken, and I was like, well, that seems like a good domain for this, and threw up my notes for deploying Rails to that. And then all of a sudden it was getting like 5,000 or 6,000 visits in a month, pretty much right after I had published it. And I found out that we were getting referrals from Stack Overflow. So people were sharing it on Stack Overflow, and I was just keeping it up to date and stuff. And so then I realized, like, you know, I can't sell stuff to real estate people or bankers or whatever, because I just don't know them and don't really hang out with them or anything. But I do know developers, and I miss Railscast. And like, I'm not trying to replace Railscast, but I could make videos as well that are in a similar vein or whatever. So with that traffic, I figured if I got them to my website, maybe I could get them to the homepage and then try to sell them a course or something on Rails videos. And that's where I started. It didn't really work because nobody knew who I was. And if you're trying to sell a course, you need sort of like a reputation, you know, and an audience. So that didn't work. I sold like two a month, and yeah, it was like $80 a month that I was making. And it's like, this isn't going to pay for rent. So then I just decided, like, what Ryan was doing with Railscast, publishing a free video like every other week, helps as marketing using the exact same product, you know? So if you learn something from a free video, you're almost certain you're going to learn something from the paid video. And I was like, oh, that seems like a good idea. And so I just changed to kind of mimic what he was doing to see if that would work. And then it kind of took off. Maybe a month or two after I changed to that, we hit Hacker News one night, number two on Hacker News all night long. And I woke up to 600 emails that were like new email subscribers from MailChimp. And I was like, whoa, this is crazy. And so that was kind of the first moment I knew that I hit some sort of product market fit, you know, because it was at that point, very similar to Tuple. It's like, you are kind of building the next version of something that had shut down before. So for right. me, it was Railscast. For Tuple, it was Screen Hero. Everybody right. loved Screen Hero, and then Slack bought it and then just kind of did nothing with it, rolled it sort of into their product. And so, you know, when you find a product that people love and it got shut down or something, it's like, that's an opportunity. That's how we ended up there.
I like that a lot. It's interesting though, because it sounded like part of what led you to do this was the fact that you could do it by yourself. What does the team look like today for folks who maybe don't know the setup? And what does each person focus on?
We are three people now. It is myself in St. Louis. Colin is in Louisiana, and he's doing basically like I am, some of everything. Coding, design, like customer support, you name it. And then we also have Kent, who lives in Montreal, and he's primarily focused on support for us because we have three products, and one of them is a hosting service that is typically venture funded for tens of millions of dollars and, you know, has a giant team. You know, it was just me when I started Hatchbox, our hosting service, which turns out that is like, you know, infinitely complex. Everybody asks for help. You know, they'll write their code wrong and then ask you for help debugging why their code doesn't work. And it's like, well, that's not really our job, but we'll help you out because you want your code to run in production. And so, yeah, it's become the three of us. And for the longest time, it was like maybe 8 years or something that I was on my own. And I had always missed. I worked at a little agency that was doing Rails that was like five people. We go into this little office, sit at the same table, you know, work there every day with on our laptops and stuff. And then I went, quit that and started GoRails. And for 8 years, I was alone. And that, like, was really tough. Like, it's on one hand a really good thing when you're starting out and you're trying to make $1,000 a month. If you have two or three co-founders, you've got to split the $1,000 between them, and it makes it X number of times harder. So it was nice for that. But then at a certain point, I was burning out because I didn't have any help. There's nobody to go like talk to when you're just stressed or whatever it is. And then wife and I have a baby on the way. And then the decision basically is, well, in 9 months, I got to do something different. The decision kind of came down to I either shut down one of our products or something, which would probably have to be our hosting service because it is probably a good 80% of the work every week. And the alternative is those customers have to go to Heroku or something that costs a whole heck of a lot more.
Totally.
Because they're not designed for like the niche, like hobbyists like we are. And so that sucks to like know that you would have to go tell all your customers, sorry, we're shutting down. You're going to have to go pay a ton of money to run this somewhere else, or like do it yourself and spend a ton of time, which is really hard. So then, yeah, that was one of the options I had, or was to decide to hire somebody and get back to having a team and stuff. And I realized like that's probably the way to go. It'll probably help me become a better person because it'll be a different challenge too, dealing with payroll and managing people and hiring and healthcare and all that stuff. It's kind of a nightmare, and you should do it unlike I did when I waited to kind of the last minute. You should do that way ahead of time, because that is, as it turns out, you hire someone, you have to do all this extra work before they can take any work off your plate, because you got to train them up, you got to get all the stuff set up and everything. And it's like not until maybe a year later or something where you're like finally feeling like I got some load off my back or whatever. And I was like, well, you know, lesson learned.
Yeah.
But glad I did it, you know, and that it becomes easier. Like hiring Kent to do support was like an obvious no-brainer at that point, because Colin and I were doing support so much that we had no time to work on the product or anything else. And so I was like, well, this would be great to have somebody else to help triage all the issues and, you know, little things like, oh, I forgot to cancel my subscription. Can you like refund it and cancel it or whatever? And it's like, yep, sure, no problem. But if you are interrupting your day constantly to do little things like that, then it's just, you can't get anything done. So it was good, but it was like one of those things that I originally thought, do I have to find somebody here in St. Louis to work with, or like working with somebody remotely would be great. I could find anybody, you know, and have a way bigger talent pool to like pick from and stuff. And so that seemed like the obvious choice, but it was definitely one of those things where like, you know, I wasn't sure if I should hire somebody locally or not, you know?
Was it a big adjustment bringing somebody on and it no longer just being you?
Yeah, it was. It became so much of like, we need to be working together like 24/7 at that point. Cause I had made my own processes that worked for me that were just in my head, and everything now had to be like written down or, you know, shared in some way. So we had, you know, thankfully Tuple for that, where we were just like pairing all day long. But, and you know, you've tried pairing on Zoom or something, and like, I just can't, if he's coding, I can't like, hey, you made a typo here or something. It's so much harder to annotate and interact with. And I don't need to do the sales pitch for Tuple, but like, it really did make all the difference in the world to just be, if we were in person, we'd have to do the same thing. We'd just be sitting next to each other at a computer all day long. And so that was pretty much what we had to do, sitting next to each other remotely all day long in order to just get a lot of those things that were in my head out. So that was definitely a huge adjustment. And it was the same adjustment I had when I was starting Screencast for the first time, because as a programmer, you're just in your own head. If you're working by yourself coding, you're not talking out loud ever, unless you're working with somebody. And so you're just sitting there with music on, you know, soda or snacks or whatever, just like digging into a problem for 6 hours, just in your own zone. And then when it comes to recording a screencast, you've got to like talk out loud the entire time and explain what you're thinking and explain why you're doing this and what's the goal and how are we getting there and all these things. And that was super hard because I like couldn't do that at the beginning. Sometimes I'd make a typo, you know, and I would get an error and I'd like pause and be like, what the hell is this? And my brain would go in 12 different directions, figure out, I've seen this before on a different project like a year ago, and it was this, and then I just go fix it in the middle, and you're watching the video, and it's like, he just like paused for a second and then wrote down the answer and can't explain where he got the answer from or why or whatever.
And not very like, helpful, not very helpful.
Yeah. And that stuff is like stuff you need to share at some point, like teaching people how to debug problems. But that type of thing where it's like, I just happen to have seen this 12 months ago and here's the answer. Good luck explaining that in the screencast. And it felt very similar to that when it was like, well, I just do it this way because, and then you're pairing with somebody, your new employee, and you're like, well, I guess I have to explain why. And then you got to start unraveling all these things that you've like just internalized over the years, working by yourself for 8 years or whatever it was. And then, you know, that is also an awesome thing because Colin had a couple years experience under his belt, but he would have considered himself a junior when he joined. And I thought that was awesome because everything I need to teach him, I can turn into educational content. I can take somebody who's fresh, eager to learn, and is a blank slate, and I can teach him the way I want him to think about things and care about these types of decisions along the way and shape him into kind of the programmer that I really want to work with. And he's absolutely done that, which has been such a blast. So rather than hiring somebody who's already got 10 years experience that might work a little different than me, we've been able to like really fit together like two puzzle pieces at this point. And it takes longer to do that and more pairing and whatever, but it's been a lot of fun to do that. And I think that's kind of like what more companies need to do too.
I'm wondering whether or not there's other payoffs from getting really good at that skill of explaining your reasoning and in turn pairing with somebody else.
Yeah, I definitely think so. Like it can apply in so many different ways. Like before I was doing screencasts, the first taste of this I had was working with another guy who was at this little consulting agency that we worked. He was just borrowing a desk in our office, but we worked together on a project and he would send me these like videos with voice memos explaining like changes to this app we were working on. And it just like showed me that the bandwidth of communication is so much better when you've got video and audio that we could iterate through ideas so fast, even if we weren't in the same room together, because he was showing me what he was talking about, as opposed to like writing it up in text and maybe having screenshots that he annotated or whatever it might have been. And then that also got me thinking too about like doing more of this onboarding, doing the screencast, whatever, has really like made me realize that the better you are at getting your thoughts out and expressed to other people, the better you can be as like a leader. You can give talks at conferences much better because you can like make sure you cover something in a way that the entire audience, no matter what their skill level, can understand. You know, if you do give a talk at a conference, that's something that people might end up watching on YouTube or wherever. So it's like, just in general, you're getting better at communicating. You know, the people who are the best communicators are often the ones that end up being leaders, because obviously, if they can explain their ideas and their vision and whatever really well, then people follow along.
Yeah, and it's a particularly important skill set if your team is remote or distributed, because you don't have the opportunity for the even higher fidelity communication that comes from working in person. And so I want to zero in on how things work at GoRails. You got a 3-person team today. Give me the breakdown of the day, a day in the life for you and the rest of the team.
We try to stay as asynchronous as we can, but it kind of starts off with, you know, I'll wake up in the morning, we'll go through all the open support tickets that came in overnight. Kent usually triages all of those for us at the beginning of the day, and I'll try and go dig into the hard ones that might require my expertise that the other guys haven't necessarily gotten up to speed on yet. There are weeds in various products that I only am the only person that knows that. But I do try to leave some of those for them to go pick up, because the whole point of having a team is they can take up some of the slack. And I think as a business owner, I have the tendency of like, I'd like to protect them from some of these things that they shouldn't have to deal with. And yet the whole reason I have the team is so they can help me with those things. So if I do too much of that, it's a bad thing. And so I try to balance it, because, you know, one of the things we ran into yesterday, as an example, is as a remote team, it's easy to end up getting in the weeds and just continuing down that path by yourself. I could have noticed if we were in the same office together that you have been quiet for the entire morning working on something really hard, and I could have interrupted you and asked, you know, do you need any help with that? Or you could have tapped me on the shoulder and asked me a question. But remotely, we might fear we're going to interrupt somebody, and we don't even know what they're doing because we can't see them all the time. And so one of the things that happened yesterday was like, Colin and I, at the end of the day, we talked about some change we were going to make. And then he was like, ah, crap, I wish I would have known this before I spent all this time, like yesterday, doing some other change that was like negated now when we decided to go a different direction. We're trying to get better at that stuff because it's just the nature of being remote. It's hard to do that sometimes, but like Tuple's got the pairing room or the stand-up room or whatever, and we're just trying now to hang out there more, like so that we can take advantage of that, where I don't feel like I'm not interrupting you because you were kind of put yourself in the room saying like, hey, if anybody wants to hang out, here we go. You know, just jump in and say hi. I think some of those things are going to be very helpful for us to, you know, not waste time over the fear of interrupting somebody else or whatever.
Yeah, that fear of interrupting is like way more prevalent than I think most people are conscious to. When you think about the way that the team works together, is there any system or process or even mindset that you feel proud of?
I try and kind of take the approach, like you'll hear, if you ever follow Jason Fried or DHH, they always talk about having extremely few meetings. That's kind of the goal to replicate for us is, you know, ideally, if you want a day to just sink your teeth into a problem and it's clear and the goals are aligned with what we want to do in the future and whatever, then like, I don't want to interrupt you. I want you to just go work, get it done, you know, show us when you're ready or when you need help on a decision or something or whatever. And so that's been good, but it also is really hard, because then it's like, if we're working in our silos too much, then we don't get to hang out. And the whole reason we like working together so much is we want to hang out. And like, we would do this just for fun, but we get to do it as a job, which is nice. So we're always trying to strike that balance there. And I don't know that we've quite hit it perfectly, but it is so nice to be able to, like when I went to Australia, like that was the first time that I left and didn't really check my email, didn't really do anything. And was like, these guys have done it, you know, run the company without me for 2 weeks, which is wild, because it's been 8 years of every day it's got to be me. It feels like that was the moment when I realized, like, this does feel a lot like what Jason Fried and DHH talk about when talking about running, you know, and Tyler Tringas calls the calm company, you know, concept of like, we're not rushing all the time. We're just building stuff, or we're thoughtful about it. We're methodical. We don't have to freak out about something that's going on or whatever. Ideally, I mean, there may be times where AWS goes down or whatever, but we want to have the ability to take your time on things, do it right, do quality work, and not just kind of, well, they need this done as soon as possible. Let's do it. We'll do it this hacky way and then ship it, and then we'll deal with the repercussions later. I don't want to run a company like that. And I feel like we've been able to hit that balance or whatever.
No, that's nice. And it sounds like your day-to-day is pretty fluid. I started by asking you, hey, what does a day in the life look like? It sounds like you start by triaging the support tickets and then see where the day takes you from there.
Yeah, a lot of times. And I've optimized like our video, our screencast stuff has been hard, because if I was to teach something I didn't know, I have to spend like an entire week learning it just to teach it kind of crappily, because I've never probably used it in production. So I don't really know the ins and outs of this stuff to teach. So what I like to teach these days is like interesting stuff that came up during my day to day that I can take and, you know, this is an interesting problem we solved. Here's how I thought through it. Here's like the results and whatever. I may still not be happy with it or whatever, but it's a real look into like actual work that we're doing and the thought process behind it. Because I think a lot of people assume that the screencasts are really for just like, here's how to build a feature, and I copy line by line how to build that feature. That's not the goal at all. The goal is to teach you how to think and then solve problems. Like, we happen to be solving this problem and here's my thought process on it, but you're going to have other problems you need to do, and you will never have the exact same problem I'm solving in a video. Yours will be similar, but it'll be like, well, I need GitHub OAuth, but with this extra feature for this reason, it needs to be different. It's like, you can watch my video, but then you need to be able to take it and morph it into your needs. Some of my days end up being that, where I'm like building a feature. Let me stop. We solved this. It was pretty interesting. Let me go immediately record this video for the next screencast. And then that helps me like optimize that, where GoRails is maybe a couple hours of work instead of 40 hours of work in a week. And it used to be 40 hours and I'd be able to do nothing else. That was all that I could do. And it would burn me out because I wasn't necessarily learning stuff I wanted to learn. So I didn't feel terribly fulfilled at the time. So I've kind of evolved that. The business needs to work for me, because if I can't run the business without being burnt out all the time, then I'm just going to bail and, you know, quit and get a job or something else.
Which doesn't sound like what you want to do.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the whole point of running your own business should be that it works for you, not you working for it. Otherwise, it's just a job. Sometimes it's just kind of thinking through stuff with Kent and Colin and figuring out like, what's next? What do we do? And I don't write any code as a developer first. I feel like those days are ones that I can't feel fulfilled on. You know, like I measure myself by like features and code and stuff that I wrote, because I just think I still believe I'm a developer. But at the end of the day, like that doesn't necessarily mean that it pushed the business forward, just shipping another feature. Maybe nobody uses it and it was just like misguided or something. So I've had more time over the past couple years to stop and think about like, I need to just take an extra long lunch and just think about what are we doing for 2025? I don't know. Like, what should we invest our time into? What do we think is going to be interesting that people will want to learn about or use or whatever? Or if we're just too distracted with certain thing that's really high maintenance, like, how do we fix that? How do we, like, make it either more reliable or, like, Hatchbox, the hosting stuff, just natural tendency of servers to just be a nightmare to maintain and stuff. And we were using other people's libraries and code and things, and they would go down, and then our customers were just out of luck because we don't control this. Those other people do. And now we can't help our own customers. And so we've had lots of things over the past years or whatever that were like, we need to step back and really rethink how we do this. We need more control over what we do every day, because at the end of the day, they'll be mad at us, not those other people that we just happen to use their software. And it's like, well, we can't take responsibility for that. That doesn't work that way. I've had a lot of shift in my like day to day where it's like making those decisions and whatever now.
How much of that do you do solo versus with other people?
I think almost all of these days, like, we all discuss it together, the three of us. Sometimes our customers are awesome. They're developers too. So we'll be able to like brainstorm things with them. And it's like, well, we've got these limitations. How do we make this feature for you, but also simple enough for everybody else to use? And it's been interesting because we have especially, you know, technical customers that we can do that with sometimes. But I try not to do any of this stuff solo at all if I can anymore, because the whole point of having employees is to help with those things. And the more discussions we have, the more they'll give me ideas that I never would have come up with myself. And sometimes the ideas are really better than I would have ever thought of. And other times they're like, it's a good idea, but here's these problems with that. We'd have to do way more X or Y, or it would cost us a whole ton to do that. And we're only three people. And so like, it helps to have that discussion with everybody to get us all thinking the same way of, if we want to keep this company going for the next 10 years or 50 years or whatever, we need to make decisions with the right philosophy and mindset behind them. So I'm trying to make sure that we all think about those things together, so that eventually it's not just me making those calls, and hopefully we expand the team and keep growing, and that becomes even easier to do in theory.
It sounds like that synchronous time is critical to aligning the philosophies and thought process around the approach.
Yeah, I think so. And I don't know, like, I've never worked at 37 Signals or Basecamp to do that, but I think they do a lot of that communication like in their Basecamp updates and whatever. Right now we're three people, so we'd rather hop on a call on Tuple and just hang out for an hour and do that, and we get to be a little bit more personal that way, which is nice.
And that's a personal preference thing, right? If that's the way you like to work, you own the business, so, you know, why not?
Yeah, totally. And it's like, we are also significantly smaller. Like, the size and scope of what they do at 37 Signals is massive compared to us. So like, they have to have those trade-offs. The more we can hang out together, the better for me, because that's what I miss the most, working remotely. And then we can meet up at conferences or quarterly meetups, and like, I'll fly them into St. Louis or something, and we'll hang out for a few days or whatever. And that's a blast. But it's like, I really, really miss that. And for as long as we can keep doing that, the better. Like, we should do that as much as we can while we're the size and while we can do that. Cause I don't think interrupting 10 or 20 people, for an hour every day or every other day, just to hang out and talk about, you know, what we're working on, that's not going to be a great use of the company's time, at a certain size. But when it's the three of us, it keeps us all on the same page. We don't feel alone. We always feel supported. And I think it's been good for me, because I just spent the last sort of 8 years working alone. So it's, the whole point of this is like, the whole team wants all of us to be successful. And if one person's struggling, we want to step in and help you out. And it gives us more opportunity to, like, somebody's just you know, struggling with something outside of family stuff, outside of work. And it's like, we can be there to be like, hey, we got you. Like, if you need to, you know, do less stuff for a few days, don't worry about it. We got you. And that can be hard to communicate as a team, just in written chats or something. Like, it's just, you feel bad trying to write that stuff, or you'll hide it. We're able to be a bit more human that way, I think, which is, you know, as companies treat people more and more like just numbers on a spreadsheet, this is something we can do to fight that.
Well, it sounds like for you personally, it makes the job and the work feel a lot less lonely and isolating. And then from a practical sense, it allows you to treat each other like humans in a much more meaningful way. When you're remote, it's a lot harder to do that because you don't have those natural opportunities, grabbing a cup of coffee, eating lunch, yeah, what have you. What's been the hardest part of working remotely for you personally?
You have the tendency to just be just work all the time. And when we launched our Hatchbox hosting service, it was like, I'm working at 11 p.m. on a Sunday night because somebody wrote a ticket in, and they live in Australia, and it's like Monday morning or something for them. And it's like, well, I don't want them to have to wait 8 or 9 hours for me to like go to bed, wake up, get ready, you know, and then you sit down at the computer and answer their questions. So I'm like, get up and go do that, which led me to doing weird things. Like, I'll just take a Tuesday off randomly, but not tell anybody or whatever. And, you know, it was just me at the time. And I'd been burnout and whatever, because the hardest part is, yeah, I feel like I got to work 24/7. It's been helpful to have the team because that sort of sets boundaries. Or, you know, we might have a weekend that something important's going on, and we'll kind of like, I'll be around on Saturday. So if anything happens, I'll let you know or whatever, but I'll keep an eye on things. That just makes it so much easier, because that was the stuff that really kind of killed me alone for the longest time. It's like, I just got to work basically 24/7, and there was no breaks. I couldn't go on vacation without every few hours, like checking my email. And we'd get back to the hotel and I'd be like on my laptop doing support and whatever else. That was super duper hard. And you just couldn't talk to anybody about it, because like, it's very technical support stuff for a random customer that's got this weird issue that like I can't control and blah, blah, blah. And like, do I want to sit and explain in the evening to my wife what's going on? Does she want to hear that? No. So it's been exceptionally tough when you're a solo founder, because you almost end up bottling up all those things yourself. Maybe if you have a mastermind group with other founders, but even then I've done that. And it's like, they're running different businesses than mine. And so that, like, my problems, they don't necessarily understand how that affects or solutions for those types of problems, and how it would affect me or the business or whatever. It's like, you know, throw more people at it. I'm like, yeah, but now I got to do more payroll stuff, more HR, you're trading problems at that point. You're almost never just like, yeah, throw more money at the problem and you're done. Like, I wish it were that simple. That's been really, I think, the biggest challenge over time. And it's, have you ever read The E-Myth?
No, I haven't.
The book's kind of basically about this problem, where it's like, you're a baker and everybody says you should open a bakery because you make amazing cakes. And it's like, well, you open a bakery, but now you have to do cleaning, customer support, ordering supplies. You got to file taxes. You got to like...
You're no longer baking.
But baking. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And so the fun part, the baking, is no longer fun, and you're doing none of that. And it's like, the book kind of talks about, you should make systems, treat it like you're running your own franchise and stuff. So you can pull other people in and they don't necessarily have to know how everything works, but you've made a system now. So you could grab somebody kind of random and put them in, and they could follow the system and produce a cake that's roughly maybe not as good as yours would have been, because you know the secret touch to it or whatever, but they could make a cake that's good. And then they could also do accounting or whatever else. And you free yourself up to, like, at the end of the day, you want to be the business owner. You don't want to be the business operator. Like, the operator is the person doing all of the work. And at the end of the day, like, what's Bezos doing? hanging out on his yacht. Like, he owns Amazon, and he was operating Amazon for a long time, but he can separate those out. But when it's just you and your bakery, like, you're going to need help. You're going to need systems. You're going to need, you know, the ability to separate the operations from ownership and think about it that way. And then this is probably the hardest part too, is until that point, you have to do everything, and you are so distracted with every little detail of making things run day to day. You don't even have 15 minutes to just stop and think about, like, how do I fix these problems? Because you're just trying to solve the problems every single moment of your life. So you don't even have time to think and plan to, like, how do I get out of this hole that I'm digging?
Yeah, you're on a hamster wheel, so you don't even have a chance to look up.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good way to put it, because, yeah, it totally feels like that, where you're like, this grind will never end, and maybe the only option I have is to shut down the business and go get a job or something else. And it's like, doesn't solve my problem in the long run, but it sure feels like I would be able to free up 75% of my brain to go do other things, you know?
How'd you work through that?
The biggest thing was hiring help. Like, I should have hired people as contractors way earlier on, tried working with a few people. I didn't really do much of that. I worked with a few people over the years, and it didn't quite work out. And maybe this is like a learning, as committing to hiring somebody full-time meant that that person was going to spend 100% of their time working together on the business. Whereas, like, part-time contractors are like, they're still thinking about, well, when this project's over, I got to go find another one. And they're not really thinking long-term about your business with you. And I feel like that's when it really changed, but I should have done that way earlier. And I could have, you know, had a contractor and took up 100% of their time to try and simulate that before I committed to, you know, healthcare and all the other benefits and the extra complexity. Having a contractor full-time means you don't have to worry about that, but you still get kind of the same benefit of, like, we're working together, and my goal as a contractor working for your company is to help your company succeed, and you start to feel more like you're together on the same ship. And that, I think, helped a lot, just being able to be like, okay, now I can delegate. Delegating was something I never could do by myself, because who was going to do it? And I became so bad at that. Sometimes I would see a problem and I was like, well, I know it would take Colin 3 days to go do that, and I could do it in an hour. So I'm just going to go do it and protect him from wasting his time on all this stuff. The other thing is, I do a million different things, and I can context switch between them because I've done all of them recently enough. But he has to go learn all this new stuff to do that one little project, which is why it would take him 3 days instead of an hour. And I had to realize, like, it's worth the 3 days. You know, it doesn't seem like it, but if it's not that important and it can be done over 3 days and it's, you know, not that urgent, do it. Let him go do it. Let him, you know, understand these things and take his time and learn the new stuff. And I will eat that cost today, but it will pay itself off in the long run. You know, and that was very hard for me to learn, because I just, for the longest time, was like, well, it'll take me an hour, and screw it, I'll go do it now.
Well, when you care, you want things done quickly, and you want them done the way that you want them done, and it's hard to see the forest through the trees on that stuff, but it is an investment in the future, so I get that. Well, Chris, we covered a ton of stuff. This was an interesting conversation. I really appreciate you talking through a wide variety of topics. What's one thing you hope listeners take away from this conversation?
Honestly, like, I want to see more people try starting their own business. You know, I think a lot of people are just scared, like I was, and, you know, go build something, throw it out there, see if people use it. You don't have to charge money for it right away. Just if people really start using it and asking you for more features and stuff, then you feel like I'm onto something. That's totally fine, then go start charging money for it. Like, it's become a thing that they depend and need to use every day, then great. You've made a product that could be a business. It comes with its challenges, but also if you can run your own company, like, I was always fascinated by that, because if I got a job Any job has a salary, and there's just this cap for how much I can earn. What if I want to work more, way more hard than everybody else? Like, I'm still stuck at that cap? That seems weird. And it's like, you own your business, you can make as much as you want. I can take Tuesday off and go to the movies and hang out with my kid or my wife. Like, we can do whatever we want. We can go to Australia for 2 weeks. And all these things are trade-offs where I did work really hard for a few years. I still might work weekends sometimes, but it to me is a worthy trade-off to like have control of my life. I can do whatever I want. If I don't want to grow the business 1 year, I don't have to grow the business. It's kind of crazy. I would like people to take that away. Like, it's not as hard as you might expect. It does take a lot of trial and effort to figure it out, but the rewards and benefits of running your own business, even if you're just consulting and you're doing that as your own business, that's freedom in and of its own. You can make just as much, if not more money consulting, you know, because a lot of companies just hire the same job. It's not that different. And there's tons of opportunities for that. So it's like that, even just doing that for a year or two, get a taste of it. See if you like it, maybe you don't. But I think everybody should try that. But it's so easy to just have to go get a job or get a job at a startup. The startup will have a different mindset than working at a Fortune 500 company or something. And it will help you get in that direction, I think. But most people, I feel like, don't have the inclination that that's even really possible. And I got lucky growing up because my parents were entrepreneurs on the side doing woodworking, and they were dragging me to craft shows on the weekend, and they make $1,500 in a day selling wood crafts for Christmas ornaments and stuff they made. And we pack it all up in the trailer and go home. I grew up to like realize, wait, my parents were doing the same thing. Like, how many people can go on a weekend, just go make $1,500? Like, it's kind of impressive, honestly. And so that was something that I had no idea I grew up around. But then when I got into college and learned about Y Combinator and startups and stuff, it was like, ah, this is interesting. Like, I could totally carve out my own niche, do whatever I want. And as long as it's helpful to other people and valuable, then they'll pay you for it. And there you go. You have your own business. So that's probably what I would encourage people to take away.
Yeah, that's an awesome message. And if folks want to connect with you directly or learn more about GoRails, where should they go?
You can find me at excid3.com or exid3, pretty much on Twitter, GitHub, Blue Sky. That's my Gmail as well. So if you find that, you'll find me pretty much wherever.
Good deal. Well, thank you again, Chris, for being generous with your time and your insights. It's great catching up, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thanks for having me. You too.
Thanks for joining us on Distributed. If you want to learn more about what we covered in this episode, or if you want to share your own thoughts, follow @Tuple on X or visit distributed.fm.